So we're having a special class preparing for Tisha B'Av. When we speak about Tisha B'Av, so we speak about a breaking point where the Jewish people reach their final breaking point with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but there were moments that led up to that breaking point. So we have many, many stories that lead up to that point, and we have many stories from that point onward which are discussed in the kinot, in the songs of sorrow that we say on Tisha B'Av itself. So the famous story that we all know is the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. There was a man who liked Kamtza and he hated Bar Kamtza. We don't know why he hated him. The story doesn't even bother telling us. Well, maybe it's not important why he hated him. Maybe that's part of the idea of Sinat Chinam, that hatred can find its way into anything. You know, when there's a leak in your roof and you see your ceiling dripping water, you don't know where that leak started, because sometimes the water can drip a long way through different cracks till it gets down to your ceiling. It could be you seeing the drip in this room, but the crack in the roof where it came in is on another end of the house.
You say he was a traitor.
Water makes its way through the cracks into the house. Well, that's the way hatred is. When we give it room, it comes in, it becomes a part of us, and then it explodes somewhere else. You don't even know where it's going to come out. Yes?
Do we have still the same hatred than like they had back then?
Seems that we have to work on it.
Because I find the thing of hating someone with no reason like very not realistic.
Self-hating Jews, you ever met one? You should try to meet one.
Almost always. What?
Meeting a self-hating Jew is a very interesting experience.
Yep.
So we see in the story that when Bar Kamtza shows up, he thinks, oh, he's made peace with me. And then at the meal, the guest says, hey, let's think about this. I hate you, don't you know that? Get out. And he says, wait, don't embarrass me in front of everyone. So there are opportunities when hatred creeps in to make up. And he says, I'll pay you for the meal, I'll pay you for half the guests, I'll pay you for the whole meal. He says, no, he lifts him up and kicks him out. So now what does Bar Kamtza do next? He goes and speaks badly about the Jewish people. He tells the Romans they're planning a rebellion. So this Bar Kamtza is a very miserable person. He's going to destroy all of the Jewish people because he was hurt. So maybe the host was right in hating him. You hear the story about how Bar Kamtza then takes the sacrifice. The Romans say, we'll test the Jews. They send in a sacrifice. Bar Kamtza wounds the sacrifice. The Jews have a problem offering it. And so Bar Kamtza proves his case. Look, the Jews aren't bringing your sacrifice. They're rebelling. So now all the Jewish people are going to suffer. Why? Because Bar Kamtza's honor was slighted. Wait a second, isn't he a miserable person? Don't we all hate Bar Kamtza? But wait, the story began with hating Bar Kamtza. And at the end of the story, we feel like we all hate Bar Kamtza. And yet our sages say, wait, there were a lot of people who were wrong in that story. Not only Bar Kamtza. Obviously Bar Kamtza was wrong. But our sages say the sages were wrong. Our sages point fingers in many directions. And they don't focus on Bar Kamtza. Look at what a miserable person Bar Kamtza was. Meaning, if we were writing the story in Talmud, then we would say, it's because of wretched people like Bar Kamtza that the temple was destroyed. Isn't that the theme we would tell our children? Think about the story. How would you present the story? The temple was destroyed over a miserable person called Bar Kamtza. When his honor was slighted, he was ready to kill everyone. What a traitor. And the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara teaches us to look at it differently. Of course Bar Kamtza was wrong. It's not where the problem began. Yes, sir.
Chazal was so righteous, why didn't he do anything? He saw that Kamtza, he saw what's happening, so why didn't he do anything? Why didn't he speak up?
First of all, the Talmud says that the rabbis who were present were wrong for not speaking up. So now you're asking, why didn't they speak up if they were wrong? So that's a little bit difficult because the Talmud doesn't say why. The Talmud just says they were wrong. Are we going to say the reason they...
What if they had the one case scenario when it happened more often? And not only like specific stuff like this, like general hidden something that would have been right.
It's difficult to sit today and judge if Chazal don't tell us why. Meaning, let's remain with Chazal saying it was wrong of them not to speak up. We can find reasons why they didn't speak up. If it's the idea that these were very powerful political figures and they didn't know what was more dangerous to whom. If it was the idea that the rabbis thought that maybe if they spoke up, then the host wouldn't listen to them. Because, you see, he wasn't embarrassed of them to do it. I've had situations where people did things that were wrong in my presence, and I chose to turn a blind eye and walk away because my feeling was that if I'm going to try to do something, they're going to do it worse. They're not going to listen to me. They're going to say, oh, you don't understand, and then continue doing what they were doing. Or do worse than that. It's not always easy when you're in a position where you see something wrong being done to try and step up and stop it. Right? So first of all, the Talmud says they made a mistake, but if you're trying to figure out what their calculation was, it's very possible that they feared that by trying to stop him, it would be worse. Sometimes if you tell someone, hey, don't kick him out, what does he do? He turns back to you and says, you know what? You know who he is? You know why I'm kicking him out? And then he goes out and tells, embarrasses him in front of everyone. Sometimes when you try to stop it, you only make a bigger scene. It's not always the right move to interfere. Sometimes you're going to aggravate the situation and not make it better. So on the one end, the Talmud does say they were in the wrong. On the other end, it's not so obvious that the weight of how they were wrong was the way we see it. It's very possible that they sat there and they tried to figure out what's right. And they made the wrong call. But it could be they made it for the right reasons. I'm telling you again, I've had multiple scenarios where I thought that the best move was to be silent. I was sitting in a car once. We got a ride to a wedding. I'll tell you the scenario. You tell me what the right response is. We're in a ride to a wedding, and the driver is he's sitting in the front, and I don't remember. I guess next to him was sitting his wife, and in the back was me and an old lady. Okay, so the man who's the driver is on his second marriage, and his second wife is sitting in the front with him. And this old lady sitting in the back says, Mr. So-and-so, we'll call him Mr. White. She says, Mr. White, how are your kids doing? So he says, fine, thank you. Why do you ask? So she says, because I knew your first wife, and she's such a lovely lady, and I still can't figure out why you divorced her. And I can't figure out how your kids are managing ever since you divorced her. What do you do now? You're sitting there right next to her, and you can't believe the words that just came out of her mouth, and his second wife is sitting there in the front seat. This is just the beginning of the conversation, okay? You're judging the rabbis. I'm telling you, real life scenario. I'm sitting right there. The lady just said that, and I'm reeling. Like, I can't believe what I just heard. What do you say?
The weather is nice today.
Isn't it nice weather today? And she goes, yeah, it's nice, but, you know, I wonder if his kids can enjoy it now that he divorced his first wife.
Coffee break?
Oh, she knew it was the second wife. She said, Mrs. White, I don't mean there's anything wrong with you. You're a very nice lady, but, you know, she was very nice, and now she has such a miserable life ever since you divorced her. And how are your kids managing now that you divorced her?
So she kept pressing in real life.
Oh, yes.
What
do you do now? I'm asking you. You're telling me the rabbis should respond. Bar Kamtz is wrong. The host is wrong. Okay, I'm coming to show you that in real life, when things are happening, it happened very fast. They're sitting at a meal. The rabbis are sitting at the table. Suddenly, he walks up. What are you doing here? Don't you know I hate you? Get out. Now, the rabbis have a second year to respond, and he goes, I'll pay you. Don't embarrass me in front of everyone. I don't want your money. Leave. I'll pay you for half the meal. I don't want your money. Leave. They have to decide very quickly, what's the right move now? Do we stand up and say, excuse me, you're embarrassing him in front of everyone? And then he starts answering us. What do you mean I'm embarrassing him? You know what he did to me? Excuse me, Rabbi. Maybe it'll end up being worse for everyone. Not so simple to judge them for what they did then. Again, the Talmud does, and so the Talmud says they should have done differently. But it's not so obvious or easy.
He stood up and said, oh, I have to leave. Making it obvious that he's suddenly being not saying the reason. But okay. Making it like obvious because of that, but he's not saying it.
Isn't that a recurring theme? Don't they say the same thing when they were faced with the question about the sacrifice to kill Bar Kamsa, like to bring the sacrifice?
Okay.
So they also say that they didn't think quick enough on the feet.
Okay.
Okay as in yes, okay as in...
Okay as in there are multiple opinions in the Talmud as to what was right and what was wrong. And one opinion says that the chief rabbi at the temple at the time was wrong because he should have intervened. Okay. And then Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who saves everyone, is also being judged unfavorably. Look at, he should have answered a better answer.
Right, about the honey and the snake.
Yes.
I think both scenarios are the same. They act the same way. They act the same way. Because you're saying, oh, he's thinking about his feelings being hurt and what people think of him. The answer is the same by the sacrifice. First they say, maybe we should do the sacrifice. They say, no, then people will think that it's okay to sacrifice a planned sacrifice. Then afterwards they say, maybe we should kill him so the words doesn't come out. No, then people will think that if you bring a planned sacrifice, you will get killed. Like, he's thinking too much of what they will think instead of what's going to happen to him.
Okay.
And also comes and calls out to them. He says, he calls out to them.
No.
He doesn't just leave.
Doesn't say that in Talmud. Doesn't say that. So the Talmud gives us an opening line. Ashrei Adam Mefachet Tamid. Praised is someone who is always concerned. And someone who's hard-hearted, he falls when bad things happen. So the rabbis should have been concerned. What can happen when you have such an enemy like Bar Kamsa? The host should have been concerned what can happen. And then again, the rabbis at the temple should have been concerned. When people rebelled against the Romans in Tur Malka, so the Romans, the Talmud tells us different stories. They used to celebrate before, you guys know the story, before a groom and a bride, they had a hen and a rooster walking in front of them, and then the Romans came by. They decided they wanted the hen and the rooster for their troops. They took them to be slaughtered. The people bounced on them, give us back that hen. They made war. What are you doing making war with the Roman legion? Word got back to Rome that they bounced on them. They sent back a bunch of troops. They destroyed the whole city. Tremendous city in Israel. It was annihilated just over that. And the same thing every time a boy and a girl was born. So they planted a tree in their honor, and they believed that was an omen for the kids to live a long life. The princess was driving by, the axle of her chariot broke. They went to cut down one of the trees to make her a new axle. So the people came to fight them. Hey, you're killing the person whose tree that was planted in his honor. They attacked the Roman legion again. They came back and destroyed the whole city. So another city lost over what? Over people, says the Talmud, not being careful, not being concerned. Hey, what could happen if we speak inappropriately? What could happen if we act inappropriately to the Romans? You have to be concerned that there is a force out there. People say all kinds of things, even in the media, about the United States and the president. Excuse me, that man wields a lot of power. I'm not sure we should just be talking so freely. Let the prime minister decide what should and should not be said. It's not our job to throw caution to the wind. Part of what we learned from the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash is we should not throw caution to the wind. So we have the story, let's go back to the first Beit HaMikdash, the first temple period. We have the story of the Kohen Gadol, Zechariah. You guys know the story? Let's do a quick review. We'll take out a Tanakh. A quick review of the story. We have Ataliah. She is a descendant of the Davidic dynasty. She is a mother, Atalia. She decides she will kill out all her children and grandchildren and relatives so that she can take the throne. She murders everyone. But they save one little child, they hide him above the Holy of Holies in the Beit HaMikdash, and they raise him there. And then the Kohen Gadol, let's take out a Tanakh. Say we're allowed to use it? I don't know, let's take one that's from the Beit HaMikdash to that. Our story appears in two places, and parts of the story are recorded in Divrei HaYamim, and parts of the story are quoted in Divrei HaYamim, that's Chronicles, and parts of the story are quoted in Malachim and Kings. So we're going to use both sources. It's a Christian divide, but Bez. Here we go.
Look around.
Here we go. So we have the Kohen Gadol Yehoyada. And Yehoyada, where are we? Here we go. So we have the child Yehoash, who is being hidden. Who is being hidden by Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol, his wife, and his wife is also the sister. Meaning, the Kohen Gadol married into the king's family. He married the princess Yosheva or Yehoshavat.
Is that done back then?
And yes. And so when Atalia murders the whole family, she doesn't murder the Kohen Gadol's wife Yosheva. And she takes her little brother Yoash and hides him over the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And after 6 years that Atalia has ruled over Israel, Yehoyada gathers the army and he reestablishes Yehoash as king. And they kill Atalia. So Yehoyada is the adopted father. He is the uncle of Yehoash. And he establishes Yehoash as the king of Judea. And so long as Yehoyada is alive, the Kohen Gadol, Yehoash is very pious. And he helps make the temple more beautiful. And then Yehoyada passes away. And after Yehoyada passes away, so the leaders of Judea come to Yoash and they say, "You are such a holy person. You were living over the Holy of Holies for 6 years. The Kohen Gadol can only enter the Holy of Holies once a year. You spent 6 years there. You're a god. Can we start bowing to you as a god?" And he says, "You know, you guys have a point." And at that point, he allows himself to be established as a deity. And they start introducing idol worship back into Jerusalem. And so prophets come to rebuke them. They're not listening.
How could that happen?
And it is Yom Kippur. And Yehoyada's son, Zechariah, is the Kohen Gadol. And Zechariah has the people amassed for him to do the service of Yom Kippur. And he's going to rebuke his cousin. Remember, his father and mother saved Yoash. Yoash was his cousin. His mother was Yoash's sister. And she was married to... Right? So... She was married to Yoyada the Kohen Gadol. So Zechariah's parents saved Yoash's life. Now Zechariah stands up on Yom Kippur and he says, "So says Hashem, why are you transgressing Hashem's commandments? You're not going to succeed. You can't leave Hashem. Hashem will leave you." So Yoash says, "Kill him." And on Yom Kippur, they stone him to death in the Beit HaMikdash. So Yoash was willing to forgo all the kindness that Yehoyada had done on his behalf, risking his own life to save him. And he has Yehoyada's son Zechariah the Kohen Gadol murdered on Yom Kippur in the Beit HaMikdash. This is during the end of the first Beit HaMikdash. And as Zechariah, who is both the Kohen Gadol and the Navi, as he was dying from his wounds, the Navi says, "Uchimoto amar." And as Zechariah was dying, he said, "Yireh Adonai veyidrosh." Hashem should see and demand. And with that, he died. And our tradition is that they removed his body and they buried him. And after they buried him, they came back to the Beit HaMikdash and they saw a stain of blood where he had died. And the blood was bubbling. So they tried to scrape it away and it wouldn't move. And so they did what they always did in the Beit HaMikdash. They filled the Beit HaMikdash with water. They had a stream that was flowing through the Beit HaMikdash. They closed the stream. The waters rose in the Beit HaMikdash. They took their brooms. They swept with water the whole floor of the Beit HaMikdash. And that stain wouldn't move. And so they tried again and again, and nothing could get the stain to move. And then we fast forward to the period of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Nebuzaradan, the chief executioner of the Babylonians, walks into the Beit HaMikdash. And he looks at the floor and he sees blood bubbling. He says, "What sacrifice did you guys just bring?" They said, "It's one of the animals." And he says, "That doesn't look like an animal's blood. Bring me the animals." He sees the blood bubbling. Now, if you've ever seen an animal being slaughtered, the blood that comes out of its throat is red hot, steaming hot, and it bubbles. When the blood hits the floor, it bubbles. But it bubbles, it releases bubbles for 2 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. It doesn't bubble for 10 minutes. And so he sees the blood on the floor and it's bubbling and it doesn't make sense to him. So he asks the Kohanim and they say, "Oh, it's from one of the animals." So they bring... He says, "Bring me all the animals you slaughter in the temple." They bring a sheep. He slaughters a sheep next day. He compares the blood. He says, "Not sheep blood." "Bring me a goat." They slaughter a goat. "Bring me a cow." He tries every animal they have in the temple. He says, "That's not an animal's blood. Tell me the truth or I'm killing all of you." So they said, "Well, many years ago there was a prophet here who stood in this place and warned us that we would be destroyed if we continue our ways. We didn't want to listen to him, so we stoned him to death. And that's his blood. It's been a century. It's still bubbling." And he said, "Well, I will avenge that blood." And he drew his sword and he started rampaging through the Beit HaMikdash, killing every Kohen he could find. He wasn't done. He went outside, he killed every person he could find. He went and searched for the rabbis, he killed every rabbi he could find. He went and searched for all the young girls, he killed all the girls he could find. He went and he had one tree, and they had on one branch 700 babies hanging, dead. And he killed, and he killed, and he killed. And then he came back to the blood, and he said, "Zechariah, Zechariah, the most chosen ones among them I've killed. You want me to wipe them all out?" And at that point, the blood stopped bubbling. It says he looked down at the blood and he said, one person was killed. And look at how upset Hashem was. What did I just do? How am I ever going to attain forgiveness? And he ran away. He left his position and he went and converted to Judaism. He said, Rabon Shom, I want to make amends for what I just did. So Nebuzaradan says they found a stone. On one stone, at the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, on one stone, they found the equivalent of 9 kav. A kav is 24 eggs, so that's about 2 liters. That's 18 liters. That's 18 Coke bottles. Okay? They found the equivalent of 9 kav. It says of babies' brains piled up on one stone. The period of the first Beit HaMikdash, the Jews were starved to death and murdered left and right. And one of the stories we lament is the story of Zechariah. Zechariah is being killed by the Jews, and then the murders that ensued with Nebuzaradan running around and killing one after another, group by group, be it the rabbis, be it the young men, be it the old men, be it the young girls, etc. So that's one story we speak about. And the Navi in Eicha says, you question me in Eicha, Hashem says, you say, Im tochalna nashim piryam olelei tipuchim. How can it be the Jewish people lament in Eicha that the Jewish people were eating the fruits of themselves? Im tochalna nashim piryam. How could it be, Hashem, you brought us to a point in the starvation that women ate their own children? Olelei tipuchim. Children, it says, there was a man named Doeg ben Yosef. His mother would measure him every year. And every year, she'd measure his height and take that length of gold to the Beit HaMikdash. She'd say, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave me a child that grew this much. I bring this much gold to the Beit HaMikdash. And it says, when there was a siege on Jerusalem, his mother cooked him and ate him. His mother ate her own son. He was so precious. She'd bring gold to the Beit HaMikdash every year, corresponding to his height. Yeah, and when the famine struck so bad, that's what happened. So Hashem answers them. It says in the Navi, in Eicha, it says, Im yehareg b'mikdash Hashem. Hashem says, how could it be that in Hashem's temple was murdered Kohen v'Navi, Zechariah, who was both the Kohen Gadol and the prophet? So that's one of the low points of our history. The murder of Zechariah on Yom Kippur in the Beit HaMikdash. We'll pick up in a minute. Yes,